This is Phil Farron, and I am driving, I am walking around. So my beloved and I just got back from the emergency room. She was experiencing some discomfort. She did have the kidney stone taken out last Friday, and she's been doing okay with that, but she has been having some pains and things, and she just kind of took a little bit of a downturn in the last few days, and it was causing her enough concern that she called the doctor's office, and they said, oh no, you need to get to the emergency room. And so thankfully, they did say that Cox North was fine for the emergency room, which means that we got in within, I don't know, half hour, 45 minutes. And we were in there for less time than it we would have been in the waiting room at Cox South emergency room. So all things considered, it was a good day. Because we ended up there, I think at about 1:30, and we were rolling out of there by 5:30, something like that. Where when we went to Cox South, we were in the waiting room for 5 hours, and then in the actual room itself for a couple of hours. So, you know, it's good, it's good. They really didn't find anything out of the ordinary for everything that she has been experiencing, given that she has a ruptured disc in her L4, L5 in the back, and she still has the stent in from the kidney stone surgery. So that's causing some irritation still. And they think maybe the stomach pains that she's having is from the Mounjaro. Not Wegovy, as I've been calling it, but it is Mounjaro. But, you know, it does seem to be helping with the blood sugar, and she is losing some weight. So, you know, these are all these things. Sounds like there's a plane going overhead. So I'm just going out for a little walk. It is, I don't know, what time is it? 6:50? So, but it's still a gorgeous evening. So thought I'd just go out for a little walk real quick and get this recorded, and then do all the things before I go to bed. And then tomorrow is another day. So I think I'm ready to go for Marvin the Martian. I've been practicing. Hauling the thing out of the van, putting it back in the van, shoving the thing up with the right effort and tilt and all that kind of thing to get it placed on my head. I think my back plate bent a little bit in the process of wrestling around. So it seems to be kind of riding forward just a little bit. So I'm having to compensate, but not too bad. So it looks like I'm good on weather at this point. Tomorrow morning, the forecast is for sunshine, 5 to 10% chance of rain. For sunshine tomorrow morning when I'm at the Walmart, so that's good, because I can get the equipment in and then get dressed right inside the foyer, because the Marvin the Martian thing has, I scaled it up from the actual proportions of Marvin the Martian. So he's 3 feet tall, I'm 6 feet tall, so I scaled everything up, which means that the head is like 2 feet in diameter, and his pteruges, those kind of Romanesque slabs that stick out straight from his waist, I think that's like 36 inches. And then I have huge shoes. So you're not going to, you know, run a marathon in those shoes. And what worked out best last year was to just put everything on a shopping cart, roll it in, assemble it, because I have to have a brush that goes on the top of the helmet. Get that put together, put the shoes nearby, put the encircling terruges nearby, wrestle the head up and onto my shoulders, strap everything down, and then get the terruges on and then just slip into the shoes. And then I just make a circle through Walmart. You know, I don't even try to grocery shop in it because that would be a disaster. Just wear a red bodysuit. And then after I get that done, push all the stuff back to the car. And then I've got a little green tutu and a really cool Marvin the Martian t-shirt that I can put on over the top of the red bodysuit and just regular ankle high. Those are what a kind of Converse-y, you know, white tennis shoes to put on. And it's cute. I mean, it's cute. It's not a great costume, but I can grocery shop in it. So that's what we'll do tomorrow. Remains to be seen what we're going to try to do on Saturday, because it is supposed to be raining. I think I've mentioned there's a young lady at one of the restaurants who's like making an album. So I had thought, well, if it's, you know, if the sun is actually out, I may go ahead and have the meal at the restaurant and then head back to the car, wrestle the outfit on and just stand outside and wave. Because I'm not sure it would fit through the doors of the restaurant. So we'll see. But if it's raining, then, you know, it's like, okay, sorry. So we get that all worked out. I have been putting latches on Mr. Potato Head. That all seems to be going fine. I am going to alter the pieces this year that stick into Mr. Potato Head. I'm just going to go ahead and drill holes through the big pegs that go into the holes in the Mr. Potato Head body, and I'm just going to stick bolts through them to keep them in. And then I'm also going to put some supports in to hold the ears in place, because the ears go in right where the shell seams in two. So because of that, I've got to have something to support the ears while I'm pulling the shell on and pulling it together. So I'm going to do that, put some aluminum supports in there. I don't need much, just enough to hold it in place while I'm closing the shell over the top of them. And then I still have to build some supports for the hat. I never really got the hat worked out last year, so I got to build the supports for the hat and get those put in place, and then I'll be ready to go for Mr. Potato Head, which is 3 or 4 weeks away. I think it's the end of August, so I think it's 4 weeks away, but it may just be 3, but close enough. I'll have enough time to get that done. Then once I've got that under control, then I gotta start Halloween. I gotta start some costume alterations and gotta start building torsos and getting it mounted to the little small wheelchair that we have, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, few things to do coming up, but should be fine. And then the difficult costumes are out of the way. Really, Mr. Potato Head is not that bad once I get all these extra supports in. Probably Marvin the Martian, between now and the end of the year, Marvin the Martian is going to be the most physically challenging costume. And that's tomorrow. And it may only be once tomorrow because it may be raining on Saturday. And so, you know, it's all downhill from here. So we just gotta get the thing done tomorrow. Make a few people smile. and we are good to go for the rest of the year. Although I think for Halloween is on a Saturday, so I'm only gonna do the big getup for Saturday, and then for Friday, I think I'm gonna resurrect the Frankenkitty costume that I originally did for Backwards Day, which is a big Hello Kitty costume, but it's kind of a little bit in the Frankenstein style. Because the Friday before Halloween is called Frankenstein Friday. And so I think I'm just gonna celebrate that this year. Drag out that costume. It's a fairly easy costume. A little complicated to get on, but not bad. And it's very cute. I can actually, the idea was for Backwards Day was that one of Hello Kitty's stunt doubles had a horrible accident on a movie and they put her together, but they had too much of one kind of part, not enough of other kind of parts. And so they installed some other stuff so I can stand in that Hello Kitty costume and slip my hands and arms out of the sleeves and the balls that are on the ends of the sleeves for hands, and I can turn the entire costume 360 degrees without moving my feet. Because I put it all on a dolly, and so it was fun. It was fun, and you know, I would freak people out with being able to do that. First couple of times I wore it, maybe the first time, there was one guy that he had seen me kind of do that, and he'd come up and he said, "Okay, that thing is freaking me out." And he had started on my left side and then started going behind me to look at it. And I just turned the head and just followed him walking around me. You know, and he was like, "Stop it, stop it." So it's cute. It's cute. So I think I'm going to resurrect that for Frankenstein Friday. And that'll give me an excuse not to do the same costume that I did last year on the Friday before Halloween. I still have plenty of things to do for that Halloween costume to make that whole thing work, including getting in touch with my makeup artist and see if she has the time on Halloween to, take care of that for me. So we'll see. More on that to come. The writing's going fine. I have everything roughed in, I think, for the Lord's Prayer book. And honestly, I think it's fine. I mean, I didn't intend for it to be really that profound. I just wanted to talk about a few things in the Lord's Prayer. But yeah, I mean, I have kind of thought about the things that I wrote about in that book. It's short. It's, I think, 90 pages, maybe 95 by the time I get the layout done. So it's quick read, quick read. but I'm working on the chapter headings now for the original Still Whispers. I did a little more artistic chapter headings where I actually had to design them in an image program and convert them to TIFF graphics and then import them in and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But I liked the way they turned out. And in fact, throughout the entire book, I was able to embed a little puzzle, a little kind of an Easter egg puzzle. And I thought that was fun. And I think I mentioned last week that I was struggling because I thought I had made a mistake. I think I resolved that last week. I thought I had made this mistake and I was getting ChatGPT to see if it could figure out the puzzle. After it was all said and done, I thought I was off by one letter pairing, but I had one too many S and not enough T's. And then the next morning I got up and checked and checked and checked again and realized the mistake that I had made. And then, I don't know if I mentioned last week that I found the Easter egg legend, and I double checked against that, and in fact, I had made that mistake, and I had corrected it correctly, and it is correct. So yay! That was back in 2008 I did that book. So it's nice to know that, you know, what, 18 years later, it still holds. So I'm going to go ahead and reproduce something like that in the Lord's Prayer. It's a very interesting puzzle, because what happens is that once I get all these things set up, I have this pile of letters that I need to do something with. And in the last book, what I did is create a haiku out of them. And I will probably do that again, because I think I'll have enough letters and a good variety of letters. But as of this point, I have no idea what the haiku is. And with the first Still Whispers, you have the haiku, but the very last word is missing. And the challenge is to figure out what that word is. So we're probably going to redo something like that. But when I did the one for Still Whispers, the original, I did the entire haiku. I had everything set. And then I realized I had counted the number of syllables wrong. So it wasn't an actual haiku. I think I had like six syllables in one line as opposed to 575. I think the last line I had like six. I was like, ah. So I tore it all apart and rebuilt it. And sure enough, you know, what came out the other side was actually better. So I was like, hey. So that'll be a little adventure. As soon as I get all the chapter heads done, I will have once more a pile of letters that we'll have to see if we can get fashioned into something like a haiku. Hopefully it will be a haiku. So, you know, all these little challenges. I'm glad I have Jesus to help me. Because that's the only hope I would have for actually making it work. But I suspect he will help me just as he helped me with the first one. I do have a little bit going for me on this one. Because I have a tad more flexibility on this one. And I can swap letters in and out in certain places. So, you know, I'm not flying blind. I can make quite a few tweaks on this. So we'll just see how that gets worked out. So, got to fix all the chapter headings. And once I have those done, I can start working through to see if I can create the haiku, get that put at the end, lay out the internals on the book, then lay out the external. The cover on the original Still Whispers is an analogy to the effability. Because ineffability is It doesn't fade away, but the effability, and no, that I'm not truncating for a swear word there. So the effability of life, and so there is a scroll, and on the inside of the scroll there is a picture of a forest, kind of a mysterious path through a forest. And then behind the scrolls, on what looks like something like red leather, there are the letters Still Whispers, except the scroll covers up the whole center section of the letters, and instead of having the letters clearly defined on the inside of the scroll, which is an analogy for our life, it actually has kind of foggy letters. You can still read them easily, but the idea is that this life is transient and it's going to be rolled up at some point. And I really like that idea, that in the midst of this transient life that is going to be rolled up at some point, that there are still whispers, that God still whispers to us, but they aren't rigid and clearly defined. They grow out of relationship, and they grow out of us listening to Him. So I haven't decided yet. I will probably give ChatGPT a crack at it, and say, I want something very, very similar to this. But, you know, here's a new background image or something. Or I'll have it create a background image of some kind of mysterious rainforest. And we'll just see what it could do. So it'll be interesting to see what it can come up with. And if it can come up with the basics, and I just have to lay in the typography for this particular instance of the book, you know, that'll make the cover a lot easier to put together. But we'll see. We'll see. So I've got some things to take care of there and some things to do and build. But the target is to have the beta version ready by mid-September, and I think we're in pretty good shape to get there. So we'll see. Then I have to find beta readers. So I would suspect it will be easier to find beta readers for this one, simply because it's a much smaller book and it's not jumping into the middle of a 24 book series or the end of a 24 book series. So we'll see. We'll see. We'll see. We'll see. We'll see. All of that will go, I'm sure it'll be fine. Anyways, so that's kind of the news from Lake Wobegon. Just a quick little thought I had from hearing about a paper that I thought, well, that's interesting. There was a study that came out where researchers analyzed, this is an amazing study, analyzed more than 170,000 skeletal measurements from 2,057 species of songbirds, passerine birds, P-A-S-S-E-R-I-N-E, wasn't familiar with that designation, covering about 50 million years of evolution. And their conclusions were pretty interesting. They said that from what they could document, the evolution of bird parts, bird body plans, occurred in rare bursts of rapid innovation, not at a constant pace. That these bursts tended to happen near the origin of the major bird groups, and that the burst coincided with periods of major climactic instability, such as global cooling or warming events. He said that birds living today in highly seasonal or high latitude climates tend to belong to lineages with faster rates of body plan evolution. The authors argued that climate instability repeatedly creates ecological opportunities that promote diversification. Okay. So, according to ChatGPT that read this article, one of the more intriguing conclusions is that evolutionary change wasn't simply small random changes accumulating forever. Instead, the pattern looks like long periods of relatively little change, interrupted by relatively brief periods of rapid innovation, followed again by long periods of stability. The authors of the article compared this to ideas such as punctuated equilibrium, adaptive radiation, and Simpson's quantum evolution. So these are all models in mainstream evolutionary biology that emphasize episodic change rather than the constant gradualism. So as I have said for years, when people use the term evolution, I just substitute that for design for adaptation. Because what I think is really happening there is that God has designed our systems in a way that they can respond to changes in environment, and you've got built in all this capability for diversity, and in some cases, rapid changes. I mean, we see in the Cambrian explosion that you have life that's trundling along, multicellular life, and then all of a sudden you get this explosion of all kinds of different body plans over the course of a relatively short 10 million years. And all the major body plans, as I understand it, are pretty much set at that Cambrian explosions. So what's interesting about this paper is that the authors discuss something they called evolvability. And evolvability, according to them, refers to the capacity for organisms to generate useful variations. They, according to ChatGPT, make an argument that bird body plans became more modular, meaning different parts of the skeleton could evolve somewhat independently. And that modularity makes organisms more capable of adapting when environments change. And when I read that, I thought, well, that's very convenient. So ChatGPT says that this is an active area of evolutionary research. Now, I did ask ChatGPT if someone could interpret the existence of this evolutionary modularity as evidence of design. And ChatGPT said, well, a design advocate might say, if organisms already possess built-in architectures that make future adaptation easier, perhaps those architectures themselves were intentionally designed. The paper does not make that inference. Instead, the evolutionary biologists tend to argue that natural selection can favor organisms that are themselves more evolvable, So the capacity to adapt can evolve over time without requiring external design. ChatGPT went on to say that the paper does challenge an overly simplistic picture of evolution, such as random mutations, constant gradual change. Instead, it supports a richer picture in which developmental architecture matters. Body plans constrain future possibilities. Modular organization matters. Climate can trigger bursts of innovation. Evolution has long periods of stability punctuated by rapid diversification. These ideas are all well within contemporary evolutionary biology. So I just think this is very, very interesting, because now you're getting closer to mechanisms that are actually built in to allow species to adapt rapidly when there is some sort of drastic change to the environment. So you don't, because typically what you have to have, if there are changes in the environment, the only way that species can adapt to them is that you have some members of that species that have already, by chance, developed capabilities which prosper them in whatever the new configuration of climate or food or anything like that is. So they just happen to be more suitable to survive in whatever this new environment is. And the difference here is that you do have some of that going on, but you also have a structure that is specifically designed to be able to respond more rapidly than just a single random chance here, a single random chance there. And I just found that interesting. You know, that for me, I understand ChatGPT didn't want to say this, but for me, having a modularity in your adaptability, well, that sounds like good design. To me, it just sounds like good design. And we may find as we go along that there's even more of these types of things that are just highly convenient for us to have, and in fact lead to, I'm turning my little recorder around here, so sorry for the weirdness on the sound, lead to the ability of life on Earth to adapt itself to various varying environments and still be able to survive, which is really fascinating. This is Phil Farron, and I have made it home.